Good morning. We left off 2 weeks ago. We were talking about using a rented apartment who has the obligations for repairs and maintenance. So today we'll begin with halacha, which although today is a CLE, this particular topic I don't think is discussed much in American law. And that is, who has the obligation to provide the mezuzahs? So over here, the Gemara says that the mezuzah is a responsibility of the tenant. He is the one that has the chiv to put up the mezuzahs, and it's not the landlord's problem. Nevertheless, once he puts the mezuzahs up, the halacha is, at the end of the lease, when he moves out of the apartment, he is not allowed to take the mezuzahs down. The Gemara says that a person went ahead and he took the mezuzahs down, shalakadin. He ended up burying his wife and his children. And with the way most Rishonim explain, the reason for this halacha is that when you take the mezuzah down, the house is now empty for a few days until the next tenant moves in. So an empty house, a vacant house without mezuzahs, the mazikim will move in. When the new tenant comes, even though he puts up his mezuzahs, which is a shmira, the mazikim already moved in, and therefore the sakana is there. Since this person endangered the new tenant by taking down the mezuzahs, so midah keneged midah, he was nenash by with his family. His family got punished. So therefore, the halacha is when a tenant leaves, he has to leave the mezuzahs up. Now this applies only if the new tenant is going to be another yid. If it's going to be if a goy is moving in, then certainly the schiv would not apply. But if you're in a Jewish neighborhood, there's a Jewish landlord, the next person will be Jewish, you have to leave the mezuzahs for the new tenant.
When the first tenant moves out, the house is empty, so there's no chiyuv mezuzah.
Correct. It's not a question of a chiyuv. There's no mitzvah on him. Once he moved out, there's no mitzvah or obligation, hilchos mezuzah, for him to have it there. However, the Gemara says that having an empty house without mezuzahs, mazikin will move in. Therefore, pashut as a sakana, or to help save, or to help protect the future tenant, there's an obligation to leave the mezuzah.
Like a new house, new construction.
Correct. Enechanam. This is not a halacha that comes from regular hilchos mezuzah, that there's a chiv on you to have a mezuzah even though you moved out. It's not your house. You don't live there. Then there's no hilchos mezuzah. If it falls down, you're not going to make a bracha. There's no chiv on you to have a mezuzah. It's a question of shmir over here.
So I think the question is,
why is it an mezuzah? That's correct. Good question. Over my pay scale. I don't know what motivates mazikim. Why yes? Why no? But this is what the Gemara says. I don't know. Now, the truth is, what you could do is just leave it there until you find out. Assuming if the landlord's a goy, you're going to take it anyway because he's not going to care for it. Elamai, the landlord, you can leave it up there, and if he rents it out to a goy, at that point you'll take it down and take it out. Okay, wait, so let's get to that in a minute. So now that we had there's a chiv to leave the mezuzahs, the question is, can you send a bill either to the next tenant? He moves into a house, now there are mezuzahs that are there already. Can you force him to pay? So Beis Yosef brings down from Rav Manoach that if the person is makbid al dameha, if the first tenant is makbid and wants to be paid, toiv l'shalim, it's good to pay. Now, the Igros Moshe is medayik this language of if he's makbid al dameo, it seems the norm was for people not to make a big deal about it. The norm was that the way the Moshe explains it was, you bought mezuzahs, you put them up, you were makai in the mitzvah, you lived there for however many months or years it was, you got good use out of the mezuzahs. So people normally were not makbid if someone else would now enjoy the mezuzahs, and they normally would not ask for payment. I don't know, perhaps mezuzahs were a little bit less expensive back then, but that seems to have been the default. Nevertheless, if the person is makbid, he says, I do want to get paid. Beis Yosef paskins that toiv l'shalim, it's appropriate to pay. However, ein metziyin miyadai. If the new tenant does not want to pay, you cannot force him to. Now, interestingly, when the Ramah brings down this halacha in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says, in makbid al dameh, if the first tenant, when he leaves, says, I want to be paid for my mezuzahs, chayiv l'shalim. He uses a lashon which the Achrayim are medayik that there's a chiyuv on the new tenant to pay, not just toiv. He uses a lashon of chiyuv. So there is a discussion among the Achroinim how to learn the Rama, whether he's arguing on the basis of and holds his Zechi and Mekar Hadin, or whether his Lashon is Lav Dafka. Again, there are different Achroinim that understand the Rama differently. But certainly Mekar Hadin, the new tenant, should reimburse the first one for the cost of the mezuzahs. Now, a very common issue that comes up is the first person, when he moved in, he was made sure that he had beautiful mezuzahs. He bought it from a top sefer, beautiful ksav, and he paid a fortune. Mezuzahs were $120, $150 a mezuzah. The second person comes in, and he is not so into his mezuzahs, and the $36 mezuzah does the job, does the trick for him. And he doesn't want to reimburse the first person. He says, if you want me to pay you for the mezuzahs, I'll pay you for the mezuzahs. But I'll pay you $36 a mezuzah. I'll pay you what I would pay had I bought the mezuzahs. But to pay you $150 for the mezuzah for the beautiful ones that you bought, I'm not prepared to do. So what's the halacha in this case? So there's a fascinating discussion among the poskim. There's a live discussion of, I think we discussed this once a few years ago in Hilchos Mazik, that if a person buys a beautiful esrog, a $250 Rebbesha esrog, and on the first day of Sukkiah, someone comes along and is mazik it. So, it's mazik it, you tell him, okay, you're a mazik, pay me the $250. So there are some poskim that say no. Since the whole point, regardless of how much you paid for the esrog, since the whole point of an esrog is to be a mekayim a mitzvah, you can be a mekayim a mitzvah with a lot less than $250. So there are some achroinim that say your chiv is only to pay the cost of the minimal amount that you need to be mekayim the mitzvah. Now there's a lot of discussion about that. Many poskim say this is only in the case of an esrog, which befrat on yontiv, you can't really sell it. No one else, there's no market today for $250 esrogim. Anyone who wants a nice esrog has it. So when we're dealing with something which in practice can't be sold, and you want to know how much to pay in chosmazik, so then we can use these cheshbonos that you pay the minimum for a mitzvah. However, something that could be sold on the open market that has a value, certainly you would pay based on the value, not regardless of what you can get away with. You can get away with less being kind of the mitzvah. Okay, good. Very good. So like this. Some achroinim say this case depends on that shiloh. And if you hold over there, you're mazik and esrog, you pay the minimal amount. Who I didn't over here? If you're taking, he's taking the mezuzah, he can say, I'm only paying you the minimal amount. Here's your $36, and that's it. Now, others argue. Now, first of all, there's a svarah. If the whole reason why by esrog you pay the lower amount is there's no resale value on the first day of sukkahs for an expensive esrog. So then that is a specific svarah by esrog. A mezuzah which you could sell a beautiful mezuzah at premium. So in that case, that svara would not apply, and then everyone should agree you pay the premium. What?
You can't sell this one, though. Hmm? You can't sell this one if you've
got more. So that leads us to the next question. As far as how much to pay, so it's interesting because you have different achrayim, different shuvas that have the opposite approach. The Mishnah Halacha takes the approach that, let's take a step back. These mezuzahs are stuck on the door. You're not allowed to take them down. If you're not allowed to take them down, Elamai, what's Allah? Allah is the person who's moving in, it's not fair that he should have the hanoah of getting your mezuzahs without paying for it. So you can force or at least push him to reimburse you for the mezuzahs. Zog the Mishnah Allah is, if that's the case, he can say, the mezuzahs that you have, you're losing anyway. Elamai, I'm benefiting from the mezuzahs. My benefit is $36. Because that's how much I'm willing to pay for a mezuzah. And therefore, the Mishnah Halacha says that Kuliyama in this case, since regardless you can't take the mezuzahs out, it's just the question of what the second person is benefiting, he can say, I'm only giving you the $36. Now,
can the fellow buy $36 mezuzahs and replace it with
the Yes. The Das Kedoshim says that if you're in such a situation, you have a very simple option. You go to the store, you buy your $36 mezuzahs, as long as they're kosher, they don't have to be mozer, but they have to be something which is kosher, and switch it. Because the whole point is to the mazikim, there's a mezuzah up, so as long as there is a kosher mezuzah up, that is fine. So if you end up with a situation that certainly is an etzah to swap it on your own, and then the $36 is willing to pay.
Do they really have to be kosher, or is that like a snap?
They really have to be kosher. Stamps don't help. What? No, you just switch them. The same way if you're switching mezuzahs or if you're checking mezuzahs, you're allowed to take it off for a minute in order to swap it. That you can do.
Can you do this after
you've been in? What? Okay, hold on. So this is one approach. The other achroinim take the exact opposite approach. And they say, let's take a step back. Whose problem is this whole thing with the mazika? Is it the first tenant or the second tenant? Really, it's the second tenant's problem. He's going to move in. He's going to unpack. They're already mazikim living here. It's a sakana to live here. Now, normally, if it's the second tenant's problem, he's the one that should fix the problem. Why over here did we put the burden on the first tenant? We put it on the first. So Chazal put the burden on the first tenant because he's the only one that can deal with it. The second tenant isn't here yet. He may not have even know that he's going to move in. So in order to protect the future tenants, Chazal said the first tenant should leave it there. But it's all there for the benefit and to protect the second tenant. If this whole takana is there for the benefit of the second tenant, Zucker of Moshe, it's one thing to say Chazal were concerned and said keep the mezuzahs there in order to protect the future tenant. But if it's for his protection, it's only right that he should pay for that protection. And if there's a loss involved, if you have $150 mezuzahs, and that's what you are dedicating to protect the new tenant, since it's all done for his tayelis, he should be paying for that. And therefore, since these are mezuzahs that are worth $150, regardless of what the second person would want to do on his own, if he keeps the mezuzahs, since it's being done for his benefit, he would have to pay the full amount. Now, that being said, very good. That being said, the same way it's pashut that if the first person would like to swap the mezuzahs, take them down and put cheaper mezuzahs, he has the right to do so. It is equal pashut that you cannot force the second person, the new tenant, to buy the mezuzahs. He can say, "Efshi b'takanas chazal, take your mezuzahs, I'll buy my own and I'll put it up." So in that case, if there are beautiful mezuzahs and he doesn't want them, what he should do is he can say, "Listen, thank you, but no thanks. It's very nice you left it on until I moved in, but now that I moved in, now I see what the bill is. I'll take them down, and I'll put my own mezuzahs up." And that he has the right. The second tenant certainly has the right to take it down, put up his own cheaper mezuzahs to avoid this fight completely. Yeah. So the Mishnah Halachas argues this svara that since it's there to save the second person, that's why it's mutal on him to pay. Mishnah Halachas says fakert. Since you see it's a sakana for him, the first, that's his punishment, so there, this far falls away. Now, what does Rav Moshe say? Rav Moshe said it's true it's a sakana for the first person, but why is it a sakana for him? Only because he endangered the second person. So that, again, it goes back to the point of this takana is protect the second person, therefore it should be at his expense. That's true, but the risk is because you have a chiyuv. Chazal was matal the chiyuv to protect the new tenant on you. And therefore, if you ignore that chiyuv, if you put the second tenant at risk, whoever that may be, midah keneged midah, the Gemara says that there was this einish. But since ultimately it's all there to protect the new tenant, that's Rav Moshe's argument. If it's for his benefit, he should have responsibility to pay. Now, there's an interesting Chalkos Yaakov. He was asked dealt with a case where there were a number of other tsarufim, but he was dealt with this issue. The Chalkos Yaakov held the Ramah meant literally. There's a chiyuv on the second person to pay for the mezuzah. It's not just toiv, it's a chiyuv mikra hadin. There was a situation where the new tenant was refusing to pay. So the Chalkos Yaakov has a chiddush. He says the first tenant in that case can take down the mezuzahs. Why? He says the same way that there's a chiv to leave the mezuzahs. Why? In order to protect the second tenant, the new tenant, from mazikim. So the same way you have a chiv to protect someone from mazikim, you also have to protect them from being over an isser. And since at this point it is clear that the new tenant will be over the isser, he has no intention of paying you, which the Chalkos Yaakov holds as gezeilo because he learns in the Ramah the chiv maker idea. Therefore, he suggests that in order to prevent the new tenant from the Oiver Nisr Gazela, that would be enough of a justification to take down the mezuzahs. Now, it's a chiddush. Even the Chalkos Yaakov says it. Only there are a number of other tzerufim in that particular case. and this shouldn't be applied lightly to any other situations. Now, Rav Moshe has another interesting chiddush. He says it's actually a tshuva, a response to someone who apparently had discussed the matter with Rav Henkin. And Rav Moshe says like this. Rav Moshe says that if the practice is that whenever you move out of an apartment, the landlord has to paint the unit before a new tenant comes in. So when the painters come, what's going to happen with the mezuzahs? They're going to take down the mezuzahs in order to paint. Once they take down the mezuzahs, he says the halacha is not the first tenant has to give a present to the second tenant. Here, I'm giving you the mezuzahs. The halacha is he can't take it down to leave the apartment exposed. Once they get taken down for any reason, the first tenant can come back and say you have no right to put them up. Once they're off, they belong to me, and he can take them. It's only while they're up he cannot take them down. So it'll come out, and this is stam. In a case where your person leaves the mezuzahs, if at any point the unit gets painted, or he takes it down for any reason, the first tenant has the right to demand it back. If you want to put up mezuzahs, put up your own. Don't put up mine. Zakrav Moshe, if you know for sure that before the new tenant moves in, the unit will be painted, that means by definition, the mezuzahs will be down, and the apartment will be exposed. There will be no mezuzahs on the apartment. And when the tenant moves in, it'll already be an apartment that does not have mezuzahs. If that's the case, he says, if you know for sure that will happen, you don't have to wait for the painter to take it down. You can take it down yourself beforehand. And Rav Moshe is matter for someone to be slamich on the svaro. So if you know there will be paint, and the landlord will and the painter will have to take down the mezuzahs, you would have the right to take it down before the painter actually. Before he actually gets there.
If someone's going to be in danger, you know they're going to be in danger in 10 minutes, you're going to be in danger more than that because they're...
No, they're not in danger until they move in. But the sakana when they move in is the fact that this apartment didn't have mezuzahs for a while. Now, whether it didn't have mezuzahs from Monday or from Wednesday, Rav Moshe is saying it's not a bigger sakana.
It's not a bigger sakana, but you're causing it as opposed to somebody else causing it.
No, he's saying that it will be exposed anyway. They will not. They're going to be taken down tomorrow. And that we will, and that's not a that certainly by the time the new person moves in, there won't be mezuzahs there. Okay, the painter there's no isser on a painter to take down mezuzahs when he's painting.
Okay.
This is a chiyuv which is mutal only on him. And that Rav Moshe is saying it's only mutal when if you don't take it down, the new tenants will end up in an apartment that always had mezuzahs. Yes, by a sale also, even though the discussion is about a tenant, by a sale also there is this discussion and the mezuzahs would be included. Now, interestingly, in Lakewood, because it's a Torah Dikerstadt and these issues come up, so we actually, one of the attorneys in town who does a lot of real estate closings, so in his boilerplate contract, he added a mezuzah clause, in which basically he writes that when anyone buys a house, so it says over there specifically that the mezuzahs are included in the sale, but the buyer has to pay for whatever the negotiated price was. He has to add the cost of the mezuzahs, or he has the option of taking them down and returning it within a certain amount of time, in which case this extra fee gets taken off. But that's something which they specifically put into the contracts in the sales to address this issue. Now we have our best and has put a residential lease that deals with many of the issues that we discussed where halacha might be different than the typical expectations. So one of the things that we put in is also a mezuzah clause where we write that the tenant has to leave the mezuzahs, which is a furish halacha, but the landlord has to, when he rents it out to someone else, bill the new tenant for the cost of the mezuzahs or force him to take it down and replace it. Also, the same idea to address these issues so you don't get into these fights of how much you have to pay for mezuzahs, mehudar, not mehudar, and to avoid these kind of machlokes.
How do you evaluate the cost of the mezuzah itself?
Baruch Hashem, once the clause is there, people generally manage to work out that question on their own. They've never actually come to Bezdin. In theory, when you have a question of its value, you would have to go to three experts to determine the value. What they paid originally is not a very good guide, because if the mezuzahs are 10 years old, they're already deteriorating, they're cracking. It certainly does not have the value of a brand new mezuzah.
It's a real life case. It pertained to me where the seller had the mezuzahs back. The buyer said, "Fine, I'll give them back to you, and I'm going to put my own mezuzahs up, so I'm going to give them back to you. But in the meantime, I have
it's not a shalosh lamidas, because if in halacha the seller has to leave it there, then the buyer could have said, no, I'm not giving it to you. So it's hard to call it a shalosh. Shalosh lamidas is usually I walk into someone's house, I take it without permission. Here, he has the halachic right to use it. Now, the seller could have said, I want you to pay me, I want you to buy the mezuzah for me, and they could have negotiated in the sale in the price of the house. But the absence of that, had there been, it was, since that wasn't on the table, the halacha is the buyer can say, you don't have the right to take it down. Now, if he committed to take it down, he's doing an avla, it's sheker shelo yasa avla, he lied to the person, and it's sheker. To say in so if he said I'll do it right away and he's not, so that's a question of sheker. But to indeed a mominus to say I'm being mishtamish loy kedin, it's a difficult argument to make because in halacha it's kedin. A buyer has the right to continue using the mezuzahs.
Is there a period during which it's we normally assume that he has to?
It's really the other way around. In halacha he can keep it indefinitely. Good. So then it's a question of what the agreement is. It's a question of it's. You'll have to figure out what the intent of the agreement is, but that's not, you know, there's no sifra simon about how to interpret an agreement between the parties. You have to look at the words and see if he's living up to his commitment or not. He could do it. If he puts up the mezuzahs before he moves in, he won't be able to make a bracha. You can make up whatever you want, and if the person agrees to come and put it in earlier, that's fine. But if he plays hardball and says, I'm not maskim, when I move into the house, at that point I will take yours down, you can negotiate a higher price in the house, but under halacha, you cannot force him to take down your mezuzahs earlier. Now, there is a shita that says that if you need it for your house, you do have the right to take it down. However, even that shita is only when you can't find other mezuzahs. If his case was, he misplaced, there's no cipher around, and therefore he doesn't take down these mezuzahs, he's not going to have the mitzvah. So then the argument is, my chaz is the dama didach, I have the same sakana in my new house, since it's impossible for me to get mezuzahs. It is possible to get mezuzahs, the problem is you're just paying twice, there l'chari, the svara would not apply, and hence we have very well-stocked mezuzah gemachs.
Is it that even if he has really valuable mezuzahs, it's not shy to get those. You can get other mezuzahs.
So Ramosha's Truva was actually talking about such a case where the person who wanted to take down the mezuzahs argued that these were special mezuzahs. The cipher was his tremendous Yari Shemayim, and he stopped writing, and he goes through the whole explanation of why he wanted to take down these. Ramosha was not impressed with those arguments. He was matured only based on Rav Henkin, that if it was coming down anyway before the person moves in, you're not adding to that sakana. But the fact that this has sentimental value, or the fact that you have more confidence in the Yerush Shemayim of this particular cipher, is not a justification to put the other tenant at risk.
But then just replace it before he moves.
That's true. He has the right. If he wants to buy other cheaper mezuzahs, he has an echrami. He does have the right to do it. Rav Moshe's Eitzah is you don't even have to do that. You can just take them down because it will be painted regardless. But without that, the Das Kedoshim says that you could replace it even with a cheaper mezuzah as long as it is kosher.
In the life of the world, everybody has mezuzahs. The house, the price is assumed to be including mezuzahs, and you have to specially say it's not, or it's assumed to not be.
Right. The standard in halacha is, without any condition to the contrary, you have the mezuzahs stay. And therefore, they stay, but you could send the person a bill if you could bill them for the new ones. We put it in the clause that that the new person has to pay, just to make it clear and to avoid these fights. It's true. Once you take it down, but if you take it down anyway, in once you have to take it down, the question is what happens over the next 4 years. And it's true. Eventually, every house will be painted, mezuzahs will be checked. Eventually, it will go back to the first person. Regardless, if the first person is not getting it right away, he's going to need to buy new mezuzahs for his house. So it's a question of, they're going to negotiate, it's a question of what the price is. And this is all in the context of who has the upper hand in the back and forth.
Sometimes they're Jewish, sometimes they're Goyish. When you move out, is there concern that, they don't mind to leave them? The Goy don't move
no, if a Goy is moving in, then you should not leave them there.
You don't know.
I don't know what you should do, and probably just call the landlord and ask him what his plans are.
But he doesn't have plans, so they're going to pay the
Okay, so when he rents it, when he rents it out, he should let you know, and you'll go take it down.
I don't
know what to do with misafik. The frat where it's a question of sakana, it's not so easy to be make with a misafik. Strike it out. You call the landlord 2 weeks later and ask him what's going on. But if he's going to regardless have to paint it, then they can avoid. You know, certainly in those cases, be something from a paint it. That's coming down anyway, and you can take it down. You don't leave it for a guy. You won't give it covered. You don't give it to a guy. Both ways you have to be on top of it. Yes. Okay. Let's just go on to the next topic. Now that we've dealt with maintenance and the mezuzahs, the next issue is what happens. A person rents a house. He lives in it for a while, and at some point he decides to move out. Now we discussed that if you have a lease, the lease is for a year or 2 years. Once you begin the lease, you are locked in. You cannot simply move out in the middle of the term of the lease. We'll discuss next week what happens if you do, but very often you will have to pay. A very simple etza is you find someone else who's looking for a unit, and you sublet it to them. So what is the halacha? Does a tenant have the right to sublet his apartment? So over here we have an interesting halacha. When we discussed Hilchos Shomrim, if you borrow someone's car, you borrow it for a day, or you rent a car for a day, after a few hours you finished using it, you have a friend that needs a car. So the here it was clear that halacha is a shoyl or a seicher cannot rent it out or cannot lend it to someone else. And the reason is, one reason trying the Gemara was, Ein Ritzon Yishiyeh Piktoni Biyad Acher. The halacha we hold that Mehemnesli B'Shuva, the owner trusted you. He lent it to you, he rented it to you. He doesn't know who this other person is. The other person can just drive off with it. He can run away with it. And therefore, you have no right to take something that doesn't belong to you and turn it over to someone else's possession. Zuck the Rambam. That's only by metaltalin. Car or metaltalin where the person can just walk away with. So the owner is not comfortable or doesn't have to trust this total stranger. Masha'en can be dealing with a house. You can't walk away with someone's house. It's here. It's karka. It's not movable. So in a case where there's no danger of a stranger who's living in the house walking away with it, Zok the Rambam, there's no reason for a kpeda, and therefore a seicher, someone who rents a house, has the right to rent it to another party without getting the landlord's permission. Now the Ravid argues. The Ravid says it's true you can't walk away with a house, but you can wreck it. You can cause damage. And therefore the landlord can say, I trusted you, you'll take care of the house, but I don't trust this stranger. I don't trust that he will keep the house in good condition. Now the Maaseh, the Rambam argues, and Shulchan Aruch passes like the Rambam, Magen Mishnah explains, although it's true there are people that damage houses, it is pretty uncommon. Houses are pretty hard to destroy. I guess houses back then were simpler. It was like one or two rooms. So number one, it's uncommon. Number two, even if it happens, it's usually very obvious what the damage is, and the tenant will have to pay for it. So in contrast to metalin, the person can just walk away with, houses, the risk is minimal, and therefore you have the right to sublet it. What? It's karka. You don't make a shavua on karka, and there's no dinei shmir on karka. Now, interestingly enough, a field, this does not apply to. Because a field, apparently, if a farmer doesn't care properly for the field, he overplants or he doesn't care for it correctly, he will cause damage, but there's no way to really tell. The field doesn't look differently a year later. So in that case, where there can be a latent damage, which is not obvious, there everyone agrees you cannot sublet it because there's a risk. Masha Enkein, a plain house, which there's not much that can happen, it's a minimal risk, there you have the right to sublet it even without permission. There are two important exceptions to this halacha. Actually, three important exceptions. The first is if you have a furnished apartment, since over there now we have metalin, now we have things that are certainly easier to break and the person can just walk away with and he can steal. Certainly this halacha would not apply because this would be like metalin now and you would not be able to sublet it because of the metalin that is there. In addition, the halacha is, this is only when you have a landlord and a tenant. A landlord's relationship with a tenant is that once a month he comes, he picks up his rent, and that's it. However, if the landlord lives in the unit together, and now the tenant wants to move out and put someone else in his place, There he doesn't have the right to do so. So where this comes up very often is you'll have a tira with a bunch of bachrim. They'll get together, 5, 6, 8, 12, whatever the numbers are these days. They'll rent an apartment in Meir Shem together. So in that case, they rent it together, and now one bachur wants to leave, and he wants to find someone else to take his place. The other bachur can tell him, no. You, we know, you're neat, you're clean, you take showers, we don't mind living in a dir with you. But this stranger, mechates, we don't trust. So in this case, where they're living together in the same unit, they have the right to be makbid and say that you have no right to rent it out to another party. If he doesn't have the right to sublet it, then yes, then he has a chiyuv to pay when he moves out. We'll discuss next week again when that doesn't apply. Now the last exception, the Rambam says this halacha you can sublet it is only if you have a family with 5 children. So halacha is if you want to move out and rent it to another family that has 5 children. So we have salacha, we're assuming that by a bias there's no hezek, and you have the right to sublet, you don't need the landlord's permission. However, if you have your family with 5 children, and you want to move out and sublet it to a family with 12 children, so over here already, it's true you can't walk away with the house, but there's an assumption that every person that you add, every household, the more people living in the house, the more wear and tear, the more damage they'll be. So in this case, where the second tenant has a larger family, here there is assumed that there's a loss to the owner, to the landlord, and in that case you'd have the right to be ma'akiv. It's only when the new tenant has the same size family as the old tenant. What?
The ages?
Not in halacha. There's no distinction brought down. The Aruch HaShulchan does say, as a general comment, really going back to Machlokes Rambam and Ravid, where the Ravid says, arguing the whole halacha, he says there are some people that destroy houses. So the Aruch HaShulchan explains the Rambam holds it's loy shchiach because it's hard to destroy a house. But he says if you can show that this second tenant is good for nothing, and the landlord can show that the last that this person was in, he totally destroyed it, he would have the right to be makbid. So if you do have a family that's known to be wild and doesn't care for the house, they're not clean, and achrami, the landlord would be able to object, but the burden of proof would be on the landlord. You can't. There's no chashash of hezek because it's there. You can't walk away with it. You can't steal it. There certainly is wear and tear, and the more people you have, the greater the wear and tear on the house.
So the new tenant would put up money in escrow to cover that possibility.
So that there is a shita that says that. I think Roy Poison would argue and say that landlord can say, "I'm not interested in escrow. I'm not interested in wear and tear. I want the house to be kept in good condition. I don't want to go through the repairs. I don't want to have to repaint it. I want to be busy with it. I want a small family that will take care of it. I don't want the larger family, even if you'll ultimately pay for it at the end." Now, the Gilgamesh Marshal actually has an interesting case. A person moved into an apartment. He rented an apartment. They had 5 children. It was a middle-aged couple. So as time went on, some of the children went off to yeshiva. They, Baruch Hashem, they made a few chasanas. And now the family went down to, there were only 2 children at home. Only 2 children at home, so it's time for them to, they didn't need such a large house. So they figured they'll move out, and they'll sublet it to someone who needs a larger house. So they found someone that had 5 children. So the tenant said, "When you rented the apartment to us, we had 5 children. So we have the right to sublet it to another family that has 5 children." The landlord said, "No, it's true back then you had 5 children. But today, you only have 2 children at home. If you only have 2 children, you don't have the right to go ahead now and sublet it to a family that has more than you." So, interestingly enough, Gilgamesh Marshal paskens that the landlord is right. So he doesn't go into it. You could argue the landlord can say that I was masking to rent it to you because I knew that in 3 years from now your house would empty out. He doesn't go through those cheshbonos. He just says he has mokum to be makbid since right now. It's only this household only has 2 children, and they're the ones that have the right to live here. So right now, you can't say that I'm not losing by giving it to because the family is not bigger. Right now, there will be more. I will have a hefsid if you swap it for this larger family.
Why doesn't he have to deal with it? He can bring his family back in. He can bring and with the wife and everybody.
that's actually the next issue. What happens if you want to have a Gedor Shabbos? extra people, more damage. Okay, so Shabbos is a little bit extreme. What happens? You have a cousin who wants to go to yeshiva near you. They'd like to board by you, and they'll stay by you for a few months. So the halacha, and this is not in Shin, this is not over here. This is actually in Siman Kuf Nun Dalet. It's talking about shutzvim over there. But here it depends. If a person, everyone agrees, people can have families can have children. The landlord can't call in a tenant and say, "Listen, you came in 3 years ago. You had another child. Get out." That's part of your household. So certainly, if a person has a child, that's fine. And the halacha is in Kuf Nun Dalet. If a person takes in someone who's Seimech al Shulchanoi, he adopts a child, he takes care of someone who's going to be Seimech al Shulchanoi, he's a member of the household now. The household grows, that is all included in the original tenancy. However, to take someone in, you're going to open a hotel, you're going to take people in, you're going to have a boarder who you're going to charge rent, he's not Seimech al Shulchanoi, you're not responsible for him, he's not a member of your household, you're just welcoming him in. In that case, it's very nice thing to do. It's a chesed, it's a business, whatever your cheshbainas are, but the landlord is losing. He has the right to object. Since there are more people in the house, he has the right to say, this is not included in the lease, and you cannot bring someone in who is not part of your household without permission. Now, certainly a guest for Shabbos is a normal use. At what point you draw a line when he becomes a permanent guest, at what point it becomes not normal, it's hard to be magdir. But take someone in who's not a member of your household is something the landlord has the right to object to.
Parents have a problem with their children. They might be cheap because it's an old couple. Mm-hmm. The wife died, the husband, let's say the kids want to move in.
Right.
Now they have kids, the whole family.
Are the kids Seimech al Shulchanoi? Probably not. If it's not Seimech al Shulchanoi, the fact that they're related is not going to be a heter. And you'll have the right to stop them. Well, they don't have the right to move in. Once they don't have the right to move in, the landlord can say, "You can't move in. You want to move in? Let's sign a new. Let's renegotiate. Let's start over again." But however, if you rent it to a couple and then their family grows, so if you lock yourself into a long term lease, you can't cancel the lease simply because their family increased in size.
You don't notify the landlord. Nothing happens.
It's a shalosh lemidas and karka. That's technically what it would be. Now here we get actually to another, so this brings up really to the next level of this issue. Let's go back to our original case. Normal, same size family, you have the right to sublet. You rent the house for $1,000 a month. Your lease is almost over, or you go away for the summer. You would like to sublet the unit to another family the same size. But since it's in the summer, you're able to charge $2,000 a month. Do you have the right, who keeps the profit? Now, we had a concept when we were going through Hilchos Shamayim of Ketzer Haloi Oisis Toira B'Parasu Shechaver. We had a case, it was a fairly complicated case, a Soicher rented something, he was mashal it to someone else, and it got destroyed. So even though technically, if there's an Oinus, the Shoyal should have to pay the Soicher, and the Soicher should be able to pocket the money. We had a concept, you can't do business and make money off other people's things. And therefore, in that case, the Shoyal pays the owner directly. However, this case is different. Because in this case, what are you charging the $2,000 for? The use of the apartment. Who owns the use of the apartment? The first tenant. He bought it. He rented it. In that case, the rent is not parosh shechaveri. It's his own parosh. He's selling a right or a use that he bought. And therefore, for any excess profits, it goes right into his pocket. However, Zokhtu Ramah and Simin Shin Samach Gimel, that's only if he has the right to sublet it. What would be if his family is a smaller family? He goes ahead, Shaloi Kedin, and rents the apartment to a larger family. Did he have the right to do that?
No.
It's us. Zokhtu Ramah, when you don't have the right to sublet it, there, since you're not giving away something that belongs to you, you're essentially giving away a right that belongs to the owner. In that case, the owner keeps the profit. Now, there's a machlokes, how to understand this Ramah. The Nesivos holds not only does the owner keep the profit, he keeps everything. In other words, you pay rent, you have a lease, you pay $1,000, you have to pay the landlord $1,000. You rented it to this other family, Shalokidin, for $2,000, Zok the Nesivos. $2,000 to the landlord, he gets a windfall. He gets triple rent that month because you have to pay. And this new family that came in, they don't pay you because you had no right to, you're not the landlord, you don't own it, and you had no right to rent it out. So they pay it to the owner. The owner gets paid twice. Many Achroinim argue, and Pesachei Tshuva's Maskana seems to be that no. That that the amount that the first person paid in rent, the landlord can't double dip. In other words, the $1,000 that the first tenant pays, the second tenant has to, that $1,000 goes back to the first tenant. The profit, the extra amount, there the landlord keeps. The keren, the amount of original rent that the first seicher paid the landlord, Mishlei Tshuva says the landlord can't keep that and keep the second person's rent. He has to refund that money.
Is the part of the money flows through the original seicher, or it goes directly from the second seicher to the master?
That part, if you look through the Mishlei Tshuva, that's part of the machlokes. Some are machalik, and they say that if
the second seicher is shaykes to the master, then why should
no, exactly this. Because just like let's take away schiras. Let's say I go over to someone and I say, the house next door I'm renting to you, it's $2,000 a month. And the person pays me. Now one day the owner of the house realizes that this is all a fraud. It was never my house. I had no right to rent it to. So the halacha is, the rent that you paid me, you really have to pay him. Now you'll have to deal with chatzar kaima agar, loy kaima agar, but whatever you, since you used his house shalei kedin, you owe him rent, even though you never met him, you never spoke to him, you didn't even know he was the owner, you thought I was the owner. So in this case as well, since the case was the seicher had no right to rent it out because his house is bigger, the owner lived there, whatever the case may be. So therefore, he rented out something that didn't belong to him, and therefore the chiyuv is directly to the owner.
He is exposed to a certain amount of risk
that the owner rents. If, for example, if someone leases the Brooklyn Bridge, he's going to have a problem. He's going to have to pay rent to the city, regardless of who it was that actually signed the lease with him.
Can he be evicted? The second one, because the first rent, there's no financial deterrent in him. So $1,000 to the first to the landlord. The person who he subletted to, paying two back to one, net, he doesn't lose anything.
So you're saying the first tenant will go to tell the second tenant this is a toast? Probably, because the second tenant has no lease with the owner. They never met. He has a lease with the first person. Now, if he's not paying the first person, because it's one of the cases where the first person doesn't get paid, then in a chami, somebody able to say it's a tayus. The problem that you'll run into is that the first tenant knew that he was doing shalei kedin. So yesh lodin, whether that's grounds for mekach tayus when he creates the problem. That's a self-inflicted issue here. So that I don't know. Now, in the case of a border, the halacha is even more interesting. What happens in the case where you rent an apartment, and you go ahead, you take a boarder into your house. Now, as we mentioned, you're allowed to take in a boarder? No. If it's not semech al shulchanoi, an extra person means more wear and tear. The owner has the right to object. What happens if you took in the boarder without asking any questions? He lives by you for free. A year later, the landlord finds out what happened. So the nesivus suggests the landlord can send the boarder a bill for the whole year. Why? Because just like if the boarder would stop moving to someone's house, shalei kedin, so it's a zenen of his nasser. He's having hanah, he's using a house for free, and the owner is chaser, the owner has a loss, there's wear and tear. Halacha is by a zenen of his chaser, even if there's a small chasar, and he has to pay for the entire hanah. Now normally when there's a vacant house, the Gemara says, it's not a zenen of a zeh chaser because it's not called a chesaron because there's an advantage to the owner that the house not be totally vacant. That's a Gemara. There's an advantage. Over here, even if this boarder didn't move in, the house wasn't vacant. There was another tenant here. So when the boarder moves in, there's no benefit for the owner. So this is a case of a zenen of a zeh chaser. The boarder had hana. The owner had a chesaron because there's more wear and tear. The Siva suggests you can go ahead, you can be machayev him to pay the entire rent. So even though the person took him in for free, the first tenant said, I'm doing it as a chesed, you don't have to pay. It's very nice. But you can't do a chesed with a right that you don't own. And therefore, in that case, he would have to pay the full amount to the owner. Now the Erech Shai takes issue with it. The Erech Shai just briefly says that this halacha of Zenin of Azeh Chaser is only by a Chaser Dekayim al Agra. If you have a house that the owner would have rented out, so then when you move in, it's a Zenin of Azeh Chaser, then we have this circuit. In this case, what would be if the landlord would call the tenant one day and say, listen, there's a person who needs a place to stay. Take him in and send me the rent. Can a landlord do that? About the not. The tenant, he leased to the tenant, he has no right to put in another boarder. Therefore, this is a case of a loikaim ala agra. This is a case where the landlord has no right to rent it out, and therefore the halacha will be different, and in Mitzvah Hashem next week we'll go through a little more of the detail of what would happen.
So in the case where the guy is going out there,